Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What say you, Richard Pellett Murdoch? Are you guilty or not guilty of the felonies wherein you stand indicted?
Not guilty.
How shall you be tried?
By God and my country.
The exact time when Paul and Maggie Murdoch were murdered.
At the end of the investigation, it was obvious.
I'm not here to work with them, okay?
And the whole point is to have this not fall into the wrong hands. This case is unique, it's unprecedented in South Carolina history.
It was earlier tonight. I don't know the exact time, but...
Okay.
I left. I was probably gone an hour and a half from my mom's, and I saw them about 45 minutes before that.
And at that point in time, SLED was not there. No one had gotten GSR from you. Your law partners or Sheriff Hill were not there.
That's correct.
No one had asked you about your relationships. David Owen was not there.
That's correct.
But you still told the same lie. And all those reasons that you just gave this jury about the most important part of your testimony was a lie too. Isn't that true, Mr. Murdoch?
I disagree with that.
Welcome to Unsolved South Carolina, the Murdoch Murders, Money and Mystery. This is our daily recap podcast about the Murdochs, Alec Murdoch's double murder trial. With me tonight is our exclusive legal analyst, Charlie Condon. We have our executive producer, Drew Tripp, here, as well as Max Harrison, who is taking care of all of the production, as well as fielding your questions. So hopefully you'll be able to reach out to us and let us know if you have any questions as we talk about what happened today. 14 hours altogether, Alec Murdoch was on the stand. The defendant in this case, pleading his case directly to the jurors. And today was about cross-examination. And you just heard pretty much the finale for Creighton Waters, right? There was a little bit of a rebuttal, or a redirect, sorry.
Not much of one.
No, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, really, he came back in for a little bit, but what we heard was what he was trying to get across, that he was still lying to these jurors. So what do we think about how defendant Murdoch handled his story today?
I thought Assistant Attorney General Waters shredded him. Very effective cross-examination in my view. The length of it, one might argue about it in the abstract, but if you sat in that courtroom, I thought it was really well received by those that count. And the theme of lie, 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 I mean, that word had to have been said hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. And he, of course, had to admit that he lied really throughout the last 2 decades, something like that. And he went through it in very explicit and graphic detail of the seriousness of these lies. And the one lie that he, of course, focused in on, which was, I think, a central point of the state's case and a central weakness of the defendant's case, is that he lied about being at the kennels. And I don't know how, if you're supposedly worried about catching your wife's killer and your son's killer, that you don't tell somebody, law enforcement or a friend or somebody, hey, I just left him. I was down there. Everything was safe. And I think, again, we still have some testimony left, but in terms of proving a case beyond a reasonable doubt, I think it's there.
That timeline just shrunk into the netherworld, didn't it?
And I think, since it's right on the top of my head, I'll say that I think it's a tactical error by the defense to belabor this any further. Or maybe it's not a tactical error as much as it's just a fool's errand. I think we've put it, because I don't think there's any way you recover from this, unless we'll see. But
I know there have been twists and turns enough in this case, haven't
they? Yeah, so. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But to that end, I don't know if it's going to help their cause, especially with the jury, as long as much of a marathon that went. But I agree, Charlie, to your point. I think Creighton Waters absolutely shredded him up there today.
Yeah, I think a fair assessment of the proof, though, is that if you're a juror that wants to have the CSI effects completely met, mm-hmm. it is true. There's things that law enforcement could have done. There are holes in certain parts of this. So theoretically, you could say, well, I really think he did it, but I'm not comfortable with the proof. I suppose I could see a juror or two. I don't see 12 doing it, though, based upon what I've seen in the last 5 weeks, mm-hmm. I guess, of testimony. And there are some, you know, interesting points that could be made about the electronic evidence that can be confusing to some. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what we're going to see in closing arguments for sure from the defense, that, hey, I know we've got issues here that you might find suspicious, but the state has not met its burden. I'm sure we'll see that.
Right. The other thing is, to your point, the lies, as Creighton Waters proved on the up there today, he lied about why he lied. and that was the whole crux of that video, or the soundbite we played at the beginning of this podcast today. Creighton Waters picking apart the reasons why Alec said he got paranoid and felt he needed to lie about his not being at the kennels. And those were lies too, just based on the very first police interaction he had when he was already telling those lies, when all the motivations, all the underlying factors that he tried to layer the story with, they weren't factors at that point.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And that it was very hurtful to what he was saying. I mean, if you distrust SLED, which is where he was going with this, was that he distrusted the state law enforcement division because of their handling of various cases, not just the boat mm-hmm. crash, but mm-hmm. I got the impression other reasons. So that would mean that the local or the county, you know, law enforcement would be more something he would trust more, possibly. But then, of course, what you just heard completely
right.
blew that out of the water.
Right. Right.
So he didn't really have uh-huh. a whole lot to lean back on, except for that he disagreed with what Creighton Waters said. We actually have another clip about more lies as we go through this, because it certainly was the theme.
It was
of
day
the
of
day.
Lies. We're not lying about that.
We're not lying. Yeah, there were lies about lies about lies. Let's listen to this. This is more specifically about the big lie, the kennel video, where mm-hmm. that just completely screwed up the timeline in this for the defense.
I did not tell them that I went to the kennel. I lied about that.
And at the same time, you also looked at this jury and tried to tell them that you had been cooperative in this investigation.
Other than lying to them about going to the kennel, I was cooperative in every aspect of this investigation.
Very cooperative, except for maybe the most important fact of all, that you were at the murder scene with the victims just minutes before they died. Right?
I did not tell them that I went to the kennel.
He didn't tell them, and now that's what is completely changed. Not changed, because I think that the prosecution was already doing a pretty specific job throughout these weeks, but boy, did it bring it home. And I wanted to just say, I could even hear in that one clip a little bit of what was going on in that courtroom, and Charlie was in there, you know, too. We were dealing with a pretty rowdy crowd today. Judge Newman took care of it.
We did. Very, Jimmy, you know, fan club.
Yeah.
Another key point there that he, in a very firm but polite way, do not react to testimony here, and it
do
stopped.
Not cause a mistrial, right? Please mm-hmm. don't. Please mm-hmm. stop.
It stopped. And it was something that in air. The line was the longest I think we've ever seen.
It was Alec Murdoch.
True.
I think it was. True. I mean, to know that he was still going to be on the stand today mm-hmm. was just, I think, irresistible mm-hmm. for some of the people that had been following this trial for so long. They wanted to hear it for themselves yeah, and to be able to discuss it.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I look forward to seeing how. By the way, I'll make this sort of maybe legal point that I found really interesting. In fact, I had to speak with Creighton about it afterwards. You're typically taught in cross-examining anyone not to ask these open-ended questions like why. You want to only ask the question you know the answer to and ask it such that it has to be a yes or no fashion. Well, today, he broke the rule book. I think, I don't know, what do you think, 25 or 50 why questions? Why'd you do this? Why do that? And I didn't see him get burned one time with that. It was very effective, and it really worked quite well. So I may have to rethink that rule in my own head. It was very effective.
I didn't know that was a rule in the legal
rulebook.
That's
generally
taught
that, and just been my experience, you better be careful in asking these open-ended why, because it gives them a chance to put forth information you may not want them to put forth in the fashion they're putting it forth. Mm-hmm. And so you're allowed to control them with these yes or no questions, and then they can explain. That's your typical rule. And he did that for a lot of his examination, but there was many, many times he would ask the supposedly forbidden why question, and it worked out quite well for him.
Yep. He was extending the rope, the proverbial rope with which he hung himself, to use a morbid analogy there or metaphor. But I'm so many, to that end, so many contradictions revealed themselves throughout the day. The big one to me, and I caught this one. If you listen back to yesterday's episode, if you were listening and have this, you'll remember I made a point yesterday. It stuck out to me how fixated Murdoch seemed and how aware he seemed with regard to the GPS location data yes. from the phones and his vehicle after the fact of the murders. And he kept making that point about he tried and tried to get in touch with SLED to get that info from them or to see where they were, to get updates from them on extracting the phone data and extracting the car data. So, because he knew he needed that data to be able to prove that he wasn't there, which was just, to me, a really stunning presence of mind. It was almost too much of a hyperfixation. And today, I think he walked right into a trap with that, because he said yesterday, I knew that our phones and my vehicle never crossed paths. Our phones being his phone, Alex's cell phone, Maggie's cell phone, and his SUV, the Chevy Suburban. Today, in cross-examination by the state, Murdoch said essentially, and I'll pull up a quote here for everyone, just to make sure I got the verbiage exactly right. But he was essentially saying that he didn't remember. You know, it's the mantra that he echoed throughout everything, throughout this trial, where Waters would try and ask him direct questions, and he would say, I just don't recall, Mr. Waters. I don't recall. I don't remember. And that burned him a little bit, because what he said to Waters today was, quote, he must not have taken his phone with him to the kennels the night of the murders based on the facts and evidence. He admitted that. And he said, quote, he believes he probably didn't take his phone with him. But, quote, he doesn't specifically remember. That was his direct quote today. He says he doesn't specifically remember taking his phone with him to the kennels or down to see Maggie, or when he went down briefly to see Maggie and Paul at the kennels. He says he doesn't remember it, but he concedes he must not have taken with him. However, he got back up there in redirect with Jim Griffin late in the afternoon, and he said verbatim, just as he said yesterday, he knew his phone and Maggie's phone and his car were never together at any point in time the night of the murders. How could he? Why would he know that? How could he know that if he didn't know it 3 hours earlier when he was testifying for the state, he couldn't remember. And here he is a couple hours later with Jim Griffin, and he knew their phones were never together, and he didn't have his phone. Just a huge contradiction. And Jim Griffin, and he just quickly dismissed it and moved on to the next thing. Like, shut up. Stop talking about this. Ixnay. One of those type of things. That's the vibe. That was the tone I read in Jim's voice. But right there, he walked himself by sticking to his script and continuing to talk, and by Creighton letting him talk, he walked himself right out on that plank.
Well, and there was a couple of things, and Creighton Waters noticed it enough to bring it up again. He said, the first time he was asking Alec, it might have even been yesterday, when he was asking Alec what he did when he went down there, got the chicken out of Bubba's mouth, and then he said, and then I got out of there. And then, so Creighton brought it up today. He goes, you got out of there, huh? You got out of there. And it just didn't, it sounded menacing. It didn't sound good the way he said it. And I think Alec tried to back off of that and be like, yeah, I was ready to go back up to the house. I didn't want to be there in the first place. I didn't want to be there and get all hot and sweaty again. So he tried to get around that, but it was still an awkward moment, I thought. Mm-hmm. And then also the other thing I noticed that felt disturbing in some ways with this timeline was when he was talking about the dog, and this was about to Drew's point that Creighton would just let him go, and he would just dig a deeper hole sometimes. And one of which is just going to be hard for the jury to totally understand, is that he were the dogs acting weird when you were there? Was anything out of place? No, everything was absolutely fine. There was nobody on that property. Absolutely nobody on that property. I'm sure there was absolutely nobody there. Really. Because within a couple minutes, there were people there, and they had to do some horrible things.
Yeah, I thought that was brilliant. And in fact, you had the dogs testifying, really, because I think, you know, most people realize that dogs would react to strangers in the neighborhood.
Especially big labs.
Yeah, and I must say, I thought that was just pure genius that he had these dogs testifying in favor of the state.
Yeah,
Exactly. This is dog country too, right? We're in dog country where there are a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
And that's just would just be a normal thing for residents of Colleton County in general
They
know how dogs react to everything on a farm, right?
And talking about Dick and Jim, of course, I'm friends with them and friends with folks on the prosecution team, and they are very kind to. They're all very professional, by the way. They do not give out any information that's inappropriate. I've just been very impressed by the way they handle themselves. But I've just got to think, I didn't get a chance to ask the defense team, I just got to think they just wish they could have wrestled Alex to the ground and not let him get up on that stand.
Yeah.
Because his credibility, don't you think, was zero, or if it could be below zero, that's where he is.
Yeah.
And they would have preferred not to have him.
I have to think that, and the professionals being what they are. And again, you know, it's easy to sit here and second guess when you're armchair quarterbacking in the moment. But my view of both teams is that they're doing both really great work on behalf of their respective positions. And it's just very difficult. And, you know, the facts are the facts. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are. But I do think it's, I guess you had a trend line. The state wants to end strong. And I think they're there. And we'll see what the defense can do in the next couple of days.
Another, stop me if we have this soundbite pulled, but I did want to read it because I thought it, and you started touching on it just a second ago. And I know we've talked about this before, but what I really was looking for today and looking for from anyone, defense or the state, was a plausible alternative theory. Mm-hmm. Like what is it? If this isn't what happened, then what happened? And Creighton Waters today really dug in on Murdoch and made a point. I'm going to read a little excerpt from it here. He started going on about random vigilantes, and Murdoch broke down crying. And he said, if you saw what I saw regarding Paul, if you saw the way that he had been done, you'd know that whoever did that to Paul and murdered him that way just had to hate his guts. Or he didn't say hate his guts, but I'm paraphrasing a fair amount here. That was the point that Murdoch was trying to make, is that he fully believed whoever killed Paul, and he says he still believes to this day, whoever killed Paul, it had something to do with the boat wreck. He was very clear to say he didn't think anybody that was involved in the actual boat crash.
Yeah, he was clear about that.
He didn't think any of them did it, or any of their family members did this. Mm-hmm. He thought, essentially, someone who was radicalized by negative mm-hmm. press, negative media attention surrounding the boat crash had come and murdered Paul, and Maggie was, an unfortunate casualty in that, a bystander. And so Creighton Waters really honed in on this. And forgive me as I read this off my screen here for those watching. Waters said, note this first line, where they really dug in and fought back against the defense's expert witness who said the shooter could have only been 5'2". Waters begins, "The 12-year-old, 5'2" people that just happened to know Maggie and Paul both were at Moselle on June 7th, that knew that they would be at the kennels alone on June the 7th, and knew that you would not be there, but only between the times of 8:49 and 9:02, that they show up without a weapon, assuming that they're going to find weapons and ammunition there, that they commit this crime during that short time window, and then they travel the same exact route that you traveled around the same time to Alameda. That's what you're trying to tell this jury?" And Murdoch said, you've got a lot of factors in there, Mr. Waters, not all of which I agree with, but some of which I do." They don't have a plausible alternative.
That is tough to hear, isn't it?
That was hard. I agree. That was hard to hear.
I mean, Charlie, where do they take it from here? Like, this defense,
here's where they take it. And I think they...
I mean, when you hear something like that, how do they take it?
Alex didn't help himself, right? They hurt themselves on that. I think they would recognize that. But there have been miscues by the state in evidence collection. And... you probably can explain this better, Drew, but I think they really believe within that electronic evidence, there's really exculpatory information on what he did to support his not being at the crime scene. I'm not quite sure I get it, but we're going to hear it in closing. And I think they think the data supports a version of supporting his leaving Moselle when he could not have committed the murders. Now, I do agree it's a bit testy with the... Or was it the kennels, kind of late breaking news from his perspective? But if you can accept, again, this is a stretch I know for maybe some who've watched the testimony, but if you can accept that he, in fact, did leave before the shootings occur, mm-hmm. the electronic evidence, I think they believe, will support him completely on what he did after that. I think that's where they are. And there's mistakes made in gathering, and if they had done the evidence collecting properly, whoever really did do it, they could have caught something along those lines.
Well, and we have another clip that I wanted to play, unless you've got something to. Okay, I'd love to play this clip because this is something that's really stuck out to me. I'm having a hard time understanding how the defense is going to walk this back. About the steps. So what we understand from the data that was on.
Yeah, that was
on the defendant's phone.
Yeah.
Was that throughout the day he had been, you know, walking various steps, but he was walking at a certain pace. It wasn't a fast pace. It wasn't a slow pace. It was just a person walking around his property. And then all of a sudden, from 9:02 to 9:06 p.m., which would be when he was getting up to go to Alameda to go see his mom, all of a sudden he does 283 steps in a matter of. Three times faster pace than he had done before. Here you go. This is what he was telling us.
I was getting ready to go to my mom's house.
Getting ready to go? I thought you took a shower already. You were just laying down on the couch. What all you need to do to get ready to go to your mom's house?
I mean, there wasn't anything to get ready in that aspect.
Wasn't
but
anything to get ready.
I was getting ready to go. I was preparing to leave.
Doing what?
I don't know if I got up, went to the bathroom. I don't know. I can't tell you exactly what I was doing.
And that's far more steps in a shorter time period than any time prior, as you've seen from the testimony in this case. So what were you so busy doing?
That's
going to the bathroom?
No, I don't think that I
get on a treadmill?
Went to the bathroom. No, I didn't get on a treadmill.
Jogging place?
Nope, I didn't jog in place.
Jumping jacks?
No, sir, I did not do jumping jacks.
What were you doing, Mr. Murdoch, for those 4 months?
Preparing to leave for my mom's house.
What? What does that mean? I mean, you're in the front room on that couch where you say you laid down. The Suburban's just right outside. What all are you doing?
I don't know if I got up and went to my room, went to the gun room.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Wow.
Exhibit A and why defendants shouldn't testify unless they have clear messaging. But having said that, there is testimony that the phone could log steps quickly, and it's not accurate on distance. And it wouldn't surprise me. They've got time to put somebody else back up, or one of these experts that have it. Wouldn't surprise me if they ask a question or two about that, how that could be misleading information. But that was that hurt him.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody in the, you know, we were talking about it earlier. I could think five things off the top of my head. Obviously, he was under pressure and just didn't know what to say to that, or hadn't thought about that point.
Yeah, I'm surprised they wouldn't.
I'm like, you could have been running up and down steps or
right.
something,
yeah.
or maybe
yeah.
you've, like somebody else said, they were like, well, maybe you're looking for your keys, or maybe you had to go do this or that, or looking for your phone.
Right, right. And just
where was your phone?
And just to be clear, they had on that graph previous time periods in which the steps were so much shorter. And so here you have this massive amounts of steps right when he shouldn't be walking around at all, really.
Well, and what also bothered me about the fact that it was 283 steps.
What?
Well, it was 283 steps was also counted on some of the other, the victim's phones at various times. And I'm just wondering if we were out at Moselle, mm-hmm. how many steps it would take to walk from the kennel to the house.
Yeah.
1,100 feet. Yeah. That's, you divide that by three for a guy who's Alex size. So say if, 1,000, that's 333.
Mm-hmm.
Adds,
close.
Yeah. So 1,100 feet is a little, 900 feet is 300 yards. That's 300 steps for a man about 6'4".
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. But didn't you finally get the, what I thought was to me, they finally let the state with their questioning, they had him on the golf cart with the weapons.
Oh, yeah.
And that made a lot of sense how you could get around and then how you could do these killings and get back to the house and the golf cart.
Yeah, really, it really speaks to that theory of somebody being shorter than 6'4", too, if he's just standing there, sitting there on a golf cart when you fire the weapons.
I know. And I guess the simplicity of their questioning on that theory, I thought, wow, this really makes a lot of sense. It was just he had the blackout rifle right there, and he had the shotgun, he's riding around with Paul. And he knew he was going to do the deed, and he just used the golf cart to catch him sort of unawares, and there you have it.
The only thing Murdoch said today that I thought was a good point was that to what you were just speaking of, riding around with the weapons, was that you don't hunt hogs in the daytime.
Right. But didn't he tell law enforcement, though, that he he was out there looking for hogs or hunting hogs they at
were,
some point?
They were looking for, I think he's actually said that, looking for hogs, but he clarified that he meant that they were just looking for sign. And it's mm-hmm. generally true that there are two ways that you would, and we'll make this a very brief aside, there are two general ways that you would try to hunt wild boar, wild pigs, feral hogs, whatever you want to call them. Most likely, if you're doing it without hounds and dogs, you're doing it at night mm-hmm. because that's when they're active.
Right.
So you're not going to just find them out
right.
in the day like right. you would a deer or some other game animal.
But am I correct that the rifle they think was used, the one that was left inside, they found had a scope on it, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the rifle that's terrible for hog hanging anyway.
The one that they think
is missing,
the one that they think's missing, and the one that they think was
it
used
has a bad scope. Just the
it didn't have scope, the night vision scope.
Yeah,
honestly, with a red dot sight on it, it's a pretty nice little accessory to put on a rifle. But
can't you just say, hey, Paul, let's just ride around with the shotgun in the rifle and see what we see. If we see something interesting, we'll target practice. I
can 100%
simplicity of it all made a lot of sense to me on how he could have pulled this off. One person.
Where my mind went with all this is we've heard testimony repeatedly that Paul normally, after his rifle got stolen, he continued to normally use Buster's Black 300 Black Outrider,
right.
the twin, just opposite
the
color.
Good one, right.
Yeah. And we recall from earlier on in the trial where the sled weapons expert, the forensic weapons expert, testified that weapon wasn't properly cycling when he was trying to fire it. A semi-automatic weapon, which is what an AR-15 rifle is, you pull the trigger, the bullet fires, the mechanism springs, it ejects one shell, loads a new one, you pull the trigger again. And that, in mm-hmm. theory, works from now until the end of time. You pull the trigger, the machine works how it's supposed to, and you just keep pulling the trigger, and it works every single time. He testified that it was not cycling, which is how you would describe that. Mm-hmm. He testified it wasn't cycling. And we've heard a lot of testimony that, we even heard Alec testify yesterday, that Paul never cleaned his guns like mm-hmm. he should have. Mm-hmm. He made a point to say that Paul didn't clean his guns like he should have, mm-hmm. and he didn't take care of them like he should have. And, you know, all the testimony we heard about Paul continuing to use Buster's gun for a long time, and then we hear that Buster's gun wasn't working properly. Well, toss that one aside and pick up the new one that mm-hmm. might not have as cool a scope on it.
Right.
Start using it. That explains why he went and got a red dot sight and put on it. Maybe the other one wasn't working for a while. That's where my mind went. Mm,
that's very interesting. And, you know, these are the kind of details that obviously we've got a whole weekend for the prosecution mm-hmm. and the defense to kind of roll over as well. But I did want to say just one more question about why he did it. Do we feel like the prosecution has reached a place of a burden of proof of why he killed Maggie and Paul?
Right.
That is still sticking with me. Like, do we have a why?
Well, of course, you don't have to prove motive.
You don't have to have that, right?
In a criminal case or murder case. However, hear me out on this. And as he testified upon hour, you know, you throw out the paranoia and the not thinking clearly, and the money drying up, and being confronted that day, and then that, to me, very interesting information that he was having withdrawals the day before, presumably that they weren't letting him have any pills. So this idea was in that Murdoch family name, that line of cross-examination, that he liked the authority and the prestige with all that, and it was just all sort of falling away. And tied it back into you became a victim with the roadside shooting so that you become a victim like you did the first time.
You bought it.
I felt better, I mean, just in terms of the shocking thought that you would kill your own son and your own wife, just seeing him on that stand and how he repeatedly had to admit to lying for decades mm-hmm. and hurting so many people. I know you're not supposed to use that for character to say that you had propensity to commit crime, but I just sort of saw him as somebody that could cross that line that you would, in the abstract, think would be uncrossable. Now, having said that, we do know they tested this, the defense, and they focus grouped it.
And that's still too hard.
We know that. And that's we're going to hear that all. I mean, that's going to be, that's another, I mean, that itself can, in a way, create a reasonable diet, maybe with
it's,
some.
It's going to be hard for this jury. It would be hard for anyone to convict a man of killing his wife and son without a good reason.
I know.
So,
and not having seen it in person, which we can all talk about circumstantial versus direct evidence, but which is another interesting point because a lot of people think eyewitness testimony is very unreliable. You know, some current scientific information. So
exactly.
The fact that this is not eyewitness doesn't mean that it's not reliable. So here we are.
I think we've very clearly, and this is credit to Dick Harpootlian, we feel miles and miles away after today from he was worried about the loss of reputation and his impending financial collapse. We feel miles and miles away from that. And we feel much, much closer to he's a damn liar and he's got no explanation for why any of this doesn't add up. Mm-hmm. Which
karma.
Harpootlian said naked character assassination, but Judge Newman countered with credibility.
Right. Yeah, I think he's okay on the record on this.
So if you're saying that they don't have to prove motive, my mind goes backwards doing cartwheels to the very beginning and trying to piece it all together as, was this a strategy? Was this the long term? Was this a incredible gamble by the state to think we'll pursue this outlandish theory of motive, hoping that we can?
No, I actually think they believe that it is the motive that his whole world crumbling down upon him after 20 years of fooling everyone else, and they actually really do believe that's why he did it. And of course, as you point out, if you didn't have any motive here, just put up this case without that at all, I think they would have a problem getting 12 to agree on it. So I think I feel it's done in good faith.
Just the way you phrased it right there, whole world crumbling down upon him. That zoomed me out a little bit, and you look at the bigger picture of I was looking specifically at he had financial crisis and he was his reputation, but it's not just those things aren't islands. It's a globe.
And his house of cards, as Creighton said, I don't know. Well, who was it? I think they both were saying at the point. I think Max. Max, you have something for us?
Yeah. You know, there were moments in time where Creighton Waters would, like, walk away from Alex or do very delayed pauses. From a prosecution standpoint, are those, like, tactics you're using to try to pull information out or
absolutely
strip your
job? It's theater, and you want these pregnant pauses, and you want your voice to go up and down at right times. And he, I thought it was masterful. Now, again, I talked about maybe the technique was a bit unconventional, but it worked. And that seemed to be his style. I think he liked sort of walking around and parading around the courtroom. That seemed to fit him. Mm-hmm, and you know, you do have some that say, don't turn your back and don't walk around like that. But I felt like his taking the time and the way he did it was just, hey, if it works for you, I think a lawyer should continue on. But no, that was not by accident. He definitely wanted to wait. He held his breath. He would, and at the end, I don't know if this was visible to the questioner, but he would lean over the podium and had the stare down with Alex.
Yes.
That's all done
That's theatrics, yeah. Mm-hmm. Boy, and this is after a few years of being around a courtroom. He got it.
This will speak to a certain sector of the audience. It's the Willy Wonka meme, the Gene Wilder meme, where he's just sitting there with his head on his go on, you don't say, and he was just staring Murdoch right in the face, and those pregnant pauses to Max's point, just it was clearly eating Murdoch up. He could not stand the pregnant pauses. He had to fill the silence. Mm-hmm. Speaks back to Creighton's apparent strategy. Get him talking, keep him talking, because eventually he's going to talk himself into some trouble. And then I think we talked about this yesterday, but the Murdoch's very clear strategy of a lot of witnesses, they start off answering, they'll look over at the prosecutor or the defense attorney, and then they'll turn to the jury. And Murdoch, for the whole time, was just trying to have a conversation with that jury. Creighton goes to the other side of the room.
He did.
And wouldn't let him talk to that jury.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot there.
Yes, what a day, what a week.
It's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I do believe the testimony, the 14 hours that Alec Murdoch was on the stand, it is something that we're going to be sifting through for a long time to understand exactly what happened later. But thank you so much for joining us for this Friday evening. We will have much more for you on Monday. What we're expecting to happen is on Monday we're going to have four more defense witnesses. If they hold to their plan, they're going to have four witnesses. They're going to have probably a couple of witnesses as a rebuttal.
Yeah, I'm confident Dr. Kinsey's going to be. I just can't imagine he wouldn't be their last strong witness.
So King Kinsey would be the person who kind of breaks down that crime scene, the forensics again?
He's going to show how the...
This is for the state, by the way.
Right. And you get a chance, if in order of cases, the way that works is the defense puts up their case. They don't have to, but they put one up. You're allowed mm-hmm. to put rebuttal only to... You can have any witness you want to do it, but only in response to the information brought up in the defense case. And so the defense made a really big point to Creighton's... cynical question on cross-examination about the 12-year-olds, mm-hmm. the two 12-year-olds. And so I'm sure the crime scene expert from Orangeburg from the sheriff's office is going to testify that, no, it's entirely possible. I know you were saying in the defense case that, no, it had to be someone really short. It couldn't be Alex. I'm confident he's going to say it could have been Alex.
Well, and we've seen him. I've seen him for the last couple of days.
He's here, hanging
scoping
in there.
It out, yeah, seeing what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have, we're going to have a couple of witnesses, we're told, by the state, if they feel like they still need to put it up. That would be probably on Tuesday, mm-hmm. Wednesday. We're mm-hmm. thinking Tuesday, Wednesday. We're looking at closing arguments. There's mm-hmm. still some discussion by Judge Newman and both teams about how long those are going to take.
Right.
So we will have more. We're going into week six is what I'm trying to prepare everybody
yeah,
for.
Yeah, I don't know if you caught that interesting legal question, because the defense requested that split argument by Attorney Griffin and Attorney Harpootley, and Judge Newman said he was inclined not to do that, but he right. was going to rule upon that. So that's another pending.
So we will have something probably on Monday about that mm-hmm. on the closing arguments. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Ann Emerson. This is Charlie Condon, Drew Tripp, Max Harrison, from all of us at Unsolved South Carolina, the Murdoch Murders, Money, and Mystery. Thank you for joining us. Please, this weekend, get up to speed with everything, but also check out Unsolved South Carolina, Finding Brittany Drexel. That is also under this franchise. Fascinating case, more documentary style, as we started our Murdoch with more than a year ago, Drew. I would love for you to listen to it, leave a 5-star review, and let us know what you think.
1 million downloads.
Oh, gosh. I know. Sorry. I meant to cue the confetti. We've had over 1 million downloads of the Murdoch Murders, Money, and Mystery podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone who's ever listened, anyone who's still listening every day, please go back, check out our archives. We've got a lot of episodes from before this trial ever started. As Ann mentioned, we've got another show that we're doing right now. We're trying to get the next episode out this weekend, Finding Brittany Drexel. Please, thank you for your support. Yeah. It means a lot.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'll let us wrap up now, but I do appreciate it. And we will see you on Monday.
All right.
Good night.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.